We're so grateful you joined us at Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. We're back in the studio with Maddie and Linnell, Jessica, Grant, Miss Tara, myself, Sandy. We are continuing on in James 3, 1 through 12, and we have talked about, you know, our growth and the controlled or uncontrolled tongue and how we can do things about that. And, of course, the logical things are to read our Bible, pray, and surround ourselves with godly friends. And we talked about direction with the ship and the rudder, and we wondered, who are your rudders? Mm. And so now we'll go on with the power to destroy and delight.
Okay. Okay, so the three classifications that we're using are from Warren Wiersbe. And I just, Greg and I, when we were preparing this, when we taught this at church, he just summed it up so beautifully with the power to direct, the power to destroy, and the power to delight. And we're going to look at the fire and the animal in verses 5 through 8, but Grant's going to read the whole thing to us, the whole chapter of verses 1 through 12, before we get started.
Not many should become teachers, my brothers, knowing that we will receive a stricter judgment, for we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a mature man who is also able to control his whole body. Now when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we also guide the whole animal. And consider ships. Though very large and driven by fierce winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So too, though the tongue is a small part of the body, it boasts great things. Consider how a large forest, a small fire, ignites. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue, a world of unrighteousness, is placed among the parts of our bodies. It pollutes the whole body, sets the course of life on fire, and is set on fire by hell. Every sea creature, reptile, bird, or animal is tamed and has been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. We praise our Lord and Father with it, and we curse men who are made in God's likeness with it. Praising and cursing come out of the same mouth. My brothers, these things should not be this way. Does a spring pour out sweet and bitter water from the same opening? Can a fig tree produce olives, my brothers, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a saltwater spring yield fresh water.
Okay, it's just good, rich stuff. All right, we're going to look now at the fire and an animal. Okay, a fire can destroy so quickly. It's crazy. So a couple examples. On 10-8-1871, a fire began as a small spark in the city of Chicago in the O'Leary barn. And that particular fire... 100,000 people were left homeless, 17,500 buildings were destroyed, 300 people died, and it cost the city over $400 million. That was in 1871. And it all began as a spark that fell in a barn. The one cigarette that fell in the forest fire in California literally caused millions of acreage, like trees, to burn down. And Proverbs 26:20-21 says, where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife cease. As coals are burning, are to burning coals, so is wood to fire. So is a contentious man to kindle strife. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow. And so to think on that, when I was a young woman, a kid, I think I was in junior high or high school. I'm trying to remember. It was probably, I don't know, somewhere in junior high or high school. We lived on 5.5 acres in the woods, and a fire had started. We were 8 miles down a dirt road, nowhere where there were fire hydrants or anything like that. So it wasn't something where somebody could call in the fire department. They had tanks that they would bring out, but it was deep in the woods, so tanks couldn't get to it. And what I learned that day, a fire actually goes in a path, and it's crazy. It forms a straight line, and it moves forward, and it's crazy in the line based on where the wind blows. And as it moves forward, it's just steady as it destroys. And so what the firemen had us do is they would have us go, and they were having us to break the line. We had to literally go and break the line. And so we would run to like different points, and we would drop dirt into it to stop the break of the line so that we could make it smaller and smaller. And if you think about a person who speaks an untruth, it'll hit a line and it'll spread amongst a group of people, and then you have to go and throw the sand to break where the maliciousness of the conversation and break it up to have it happen. But what happens is if somebody speaks something and it sets off a spark, they can actually destroy lives mm-hmm. by the idleness of their words or their spirit of judgment or condemnation. And I've watched that happen over and over, of all places, in ministry, mm-hmm. in the church, where somebody had an attitude against somebody, and so they just went from one person to one person sharing a little truth that they thought they had the right to share, and it ends up destroying a whole host of people's response to one person. Yep. and the trajectory, and you know, that goes against everything that Christ taught us, because all have sinned and fall short. And so guarding against that, and as a kid, that just, the fire thing impacted me. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I like feel like I had profound lessons on that. So I want us to think on through, like, how have you seen it? I'm not wanting this to, I don't know, it's a bad question. Let's not even go there. It's like, I don't even want to go there. How have you been a person who has chosen to stop the fire?
That's been one thing that I have always admired about you, especially at Grace, that as soon as anyone starts talking negatively about someone else, that you start asking them questions of, like, is this building up their character? Is this true? First of all, like, if it's not, you have no business saying that. But also, have you considered the effects that these things have? And then just speaking truth about that person of, like, mm-hmm. this is not accurate for what I know of their character. There must be some mistake, you know, and just stopping things as they are by speaking truth, and how powerful that has been. It's been really cool.
That's so true, because people can gossip so fast, mm-hmm. you know, but if you can speak truth, there's always something good about a person that you can bring up and change the direction of the conversation.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, even, I mean, obviously there are times when you definitely do need to call out and be like, okay, this needs to, like, stop, we need to stop it. But, you know, a lot of times in conversations too, if someone brings up something like that, you can easily, like, put a stop to the conversation by just not mentioning anything about it, because a lot of times, you know, the whole point of gossip is to, like,
spread.
Yeah, to spread and, you mm-hmm. know, kind of make a big deal out of something. And so if your response to it isn't something that they like or are wanting as the response, then that just kind of puts a stop to it, because you're not, they don't, can't feed off of you now. Right. So it just kind of stops.
That's good. And I think Jess had shared on the earlier one, you know, sometimes I want to speak because I want to get something out. And I think it's the same when it comes to slander, gossip, is there, scripture refers to it, it's a tasty morsel. Mm-hmm. And, it destroys. And so if I can keep in my mind the destruction and that vision of the fire line, then it holds me back. It like that for me was huge. And the visual, whenever I read this passage, I can't read this without remembering spending that entire weekend, all we did was run and try to stop the fire line. Mm-hmm. And I studied fire for this passage at some point, I can't remember, within the last 25 years. It's crazy because I know Jess's brother has done firefighter mm-hmm. stuff. They talk about how fast, so when they have the forest fires, the line sometimes is so fast that they can't break it. And so if you're in the line of the fire, they'll say, jump in the water and stay down for just a minute, and it will have passed that fast. Like, literally. So if you can get to where you are under something as it shoots over, it moves so fast that you could actually, like, get under something and be safe, because that's how fast it passes through. When it's one of those massive ones, it's just so mm-hmm. swift and destructive. And if we can keep that in our mind, it helps us to refrain from the whatever we might, ugh, God forgive us. Mm-hmm. And so, and the guarding of that. And then if we consider this next part. We're going to look at the power to delight, because God is creator and giver, and he wants that bounty. And so in verses 9 through 12, he references, and I keep the whole time we've been reading this, I've just been basking in what I've seen in Israel. But sometimes it praises our Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those that have made the image of God. That's hard. And so blessing and cursing are pouring out of the same mouth. Surely, my brothers and sisters, this is not right. Does a spring of water bubble out with fresh water and bitter water? And does a fig tree produce olives or a grapevine produce figs? No, you can't draw fresh water from a salty spring. I'm going to give you an example of two big bodies of water when we were in Israel. The Dead Sea is known for these amazing minerals, potassium and magnesium and all this stuff that therapeutically the largest industry Israel has next to their technology is their production of the spa material they get from the Dead Sea. But the Dead Sea's dead. Fish cannot live in it. No life lives in it because there is no fresh water source. Well, Greg and I, when we went to Greece, we went to Lake Voulagmeni. Lake Voulagmeni has all the same resources the Dead Sea has, but it has an unknown. They have researched as far as they can with technology, and they've never found it. They don't know where the natural source of water comes from. But Lake Voulagmeni has everything that the Dead Sea has, but it has one thing it doesn't have, and it has a natural water source, and they can't figure out where it's coming from. So Lake Voulagmeni has fish living in it. And whereas the Dead Sea is, it's literally so thick, you literally can stand upright and you can run because it's like you're moving through a gel. It's the craziest thing, you guys. It's so crazy. Lake Voulagmeni, Greg and I swam the whole perimeter of the lake, and I'm like, Greg, I'm not the least bit exhausted. And we swam an entire day. But I think it's because of the buoyancy of all the minerals that hold you up. But the little fishies, and this is kind of cool and like a side story, they have little fishes and they're called the doctor fish, and they eat your dead skin off. So it's kind of fun to have the little doctor fishes. But it literally has the life, and it brings healing, and it has the life source, and so life is able to stay in it. And which is a beautiful example of what it's referring to here. A fresh spring cannot produce. And so this one does produce, and they don't know why or how, but it has that live water source. It's so crazy. All right, so with the power to delight, why do you think he uses the example of the trees? Think on other scriptures.
Well, in John 15, I was just thinking of this. In verse 4, it says, "Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me." So I was thinking, like, the fruit that we get from, you know, our words and things that we do, if you're abiding in the wrong place, you're going to get the wrong fruit. So same with our words. If we're drawing from the wrong source, then we're going to get a different fruit than we should be yielding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that goes back to Grant's verse where it says that you taste of the fruit of it. It's so good. It's just so good. All right, and so a tree cannot, a fig tree cannot bear an olive. And what you have to understand is the reason why James would have used this in Israel, even today, their economy is on their trees as far as the olive. Mm-hmm. So the next one, so you're talking technology, then we have the minerals, the spa, then you have the olive production that they, the olive oil, wood, and everything that they have. Their economy is based on these things, the water source and the trees. Now, so think about the community and the communal aspect we talked about at the beginning and how their economy is impacted. And so, I'm sorry, it's overwhelming. I'm just going to make someone cry. Our economy, our spiritual economy, is impacted by our mouths. The fruit of how we speak affects the spiritual economy, the spiritual wealth of our community. God is so good. I'm like, I don't think we ever realize how much he has for us in his word. And thinking through. So the power to delight. And so the spring and bubbling up the fresh water and the fig tree and the olive tree, and they're all producing, and the economy is growing because of it. It's life-giving. Life-giving. Mm-hmm. And so making our words so that our words are life-giving. If you were to sum up what we've learned today from James and what he's trying to give to the people, what would you say?
Well, I think that last little bit does a really good job at giving a really good picture to sum it up with, because it says, you know, you're talking about the life-giving water versus the bitter water. And so it's like our words can either be life-giving to the spiritual economy of believers and the community in believers, or it can be bitter and it can just, you know, like that, the image that bitter brings to your mind is not good at all. Like, nobody likes it. It's like people just want to spit it out and get rid of it. It's like, it's not going to be good for the spiritual economy. So I think those two examples with the water are really a good way to sum it up. We need to be life-giving, not bitter.
When you said that, it made me think, I don't know if you will remember this, but in Samaria, as we're from Nablus into Samaria, literally on the bus, and I've gone three times now, and this is something they use every time. But if you look to the left, this is what they refer to as the cursed land. And when you look to the right, this is what they refer to as the blessed land. And it's crazy. It's lush and rich and green. And there's the dirt and the barrenness. And literally on this road, you can see this is the area in the Old Testament when it refers to the land as blessed and cursed. And physically today, you can still see that reference and how the economy has been impacted by the blessing and the cursing that was given to it. Anybody else want to sum up what they feel like they've taken from James?
Just that words have power, and that, you know, and that they affect not only myself but everyone around me as well.
Even the smallest thing that somebody says or that you say can have such a big impact. I feel like, as you mentioned something earlier, even just about the tone of the way that you say things, like the smallest piece of our words or the way that we say it can have a bigger impact than we even know in the time.
Yeah. Help me, God, to be conscious of that. And even just something that we may not even be conscious of. So I was gone out of town, and Linnell blessed me in that she called me up, and she's like, "Hi, you're back." And so in her scheme of things, she didn't think anything of it. But in my economy, I felt so loved because of that connection. And so we have a power to bless in simple, simple ways. God bless.